All right, strap in, folks, because today we're diving headfirst into a real legal puzzle. Imagine this. You're right in the thick of committing a felony. Suddenly something goes terribly wrong. Someone dies. Now the question is, was it your fault or was it just a horrible, terrible coincidence?
It's a question that really gets at the core of what criminal responsibility even means, and that's precisely what the Virginia case, King v. Commonwealth, tries to grapple with. We're going to be looking at that fine line between causation and just plain bad luck, especially in the context of the felony murder rule.
Okay, so set the scene for us. What actually happened in this King case?
All right, so picture this. It's 1984. Nelson King and Mark Bailey are flying a plane. Not just any plane, though. This one is packed with over 500 pounds of marijuana. Oh, and did I mention, Bailey, who's the pilot, isn't even licensed. They run into some really nasty weather, and the plane ends up crashing right into a mountain. Bailey is killed, and King survives.
Wow, I can already feel how heavy this is getting. So what happens next? Drug trafficking charges.
You'd think, right? But it goes even further than that. King ends up getting charged with second-degree murder under something called the felony murder rule. The trial court's reasoning, well, since Bailey died during a felony, they said King is automatically responsible.
Wait, hold on. That feels like a giant leap in logic to me. So just because they were committing a crime together, King automatically gets hit with a murder charge. Isn't that a pretty slippery slope?
That's the debate that always swirls around the felony murder doctrine. It essentially means if someone dies during a felony, you can be held responsible for their death even if you didn't directly cause it. It's definitely a controversial rule, and for good reason.
Yeah, I'd say controversial is an understatement. So what was the outcome in King's case? Did the court agree with this whole felony murder argument?
Actually, they didn't. The Court of Appeals decided to overturn the conviction, and this is where things get super interesting for anyone who wants to really get a handle on the finer points of legal causation. See, the court basically said the crash wasn't directly caused by the fact they were smuggling drugs. The real problem, they said, was the bad weather and pilot error.
Okay, so walk me through this. Are you saying that the crime and the death happened at the same time, but one didn't actually cause the other?
Exactly, that's the point. The court was laser-focused on this concept of causation. Like, was there a direct causal link between the crime, the drug smuggling, and Bailey's death? And the court basically said that the drugs, they were just there. They weren't what caused the crash.
Okay, I'm starting to see how the whole case hinges on making that distinction. So they overturned the murder conviction. But what was the court's reasoning behind doing that?
Well, they relied on precedents like Heacock v. Commonwealth and Commonwealth v. Redline. Those are cases that really hammered home the need for a direct link between the felony and the death. Their view was that if you stretch the felony murder rule to cover these situations where the death is more of a coincidence, you're basically punishing someone for just bad luck, for misadventure, not for actual malice or intent to harm.
That whole misadventure idea is really interesting. So are you saying just being involved in a felony isn't automatically enough to be on the hook for someone's death? It has to be your actions during the felony that directly caused it, right?
You got it. And the court in King made that crystal clear. They even went so far as to point out that criminal laws should be interpreted as narrowly as possible. That's to protect individual liberty, to make sure we're not overstepping. They didn't want to just expand the felony murder rule to cover any death that happened during a crime, especially if it wasn't a direct result of the crime itself.
It feels like this case has implications far beyond just what happened to King, right? This sets a legal precedent, doesn't it? What does that mean for other cases moving forward?
Absolutely, it does. King v. Commonwealth sends a very clear message to prosecutors. If you want to get a felony murder conviction to stick, you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the death was a direct consequence of the felony. So think about it like this. If a guard is shot and killed during a bank robbery, that's pretty straightforward direct causation. But if, let's say, the getaway driver later crashes their car in regular traffic, something completely unrelated, well, that's just a coincidence. That's not felony murder. You know what's so fascinating about this case? It really cuts to the chase of what the felony murder rule is all about. It's meant to discourage folks from getting involved in risky felonies, you know, dangerous ones, by making sure they're accountable for any deaths that happen as a direct result.
Right, so it's like sending the message, listen, if you're going to get mixed up in some serious illegal activity, you better be ready to face the music, even if things go sideways in a way you didn't expect. But where do we draw that line? When is it holding someone responsible, and when is it just a case of bad luck?
You hit the nail on the head. That's the real heart of the matter. There has to be a clear link, a chain of events that directly connects the felony and the death. That's exactly what King v. Commonwealth really hammers home. You can't just slap on the felony murder rule without carefully looking at the specific circumstances of what happened.
So how did the court in this King case determine whether there was that connection, you know, between smuggling the drugs and Bailey's death. What factors were they looking at?
They went deep into the evidence around the plane crash, everything from the weather conditions to the pilot's level of experience, even the condition of the plane itself. What they found was that the crash was a perfect storm of bad weather coupled with pilot error. Specifically, Bailey was flying in dense fog and below the safe altitude for those conditions.
So they were essentially trying to figure out if the crash would have happened, regardless of the fact that they were smuggling drugs. It was just a tragic accident waiting to happen, whether the crime was involved or not.
Exactly. You nailed it. And in this particular situation, they decided that the crash was probably because of dangerous flying conditions and Bailey's lack of experience as a pilot, not because the plane happened to be carrying drugs.
So the drugs didn't actually cause the crash. They were just along for the ride, so to speak. But that makes me wonder, what if, let's say, hypothetically, Bailey was a really seasoned pilot, you know, a real expert. What if the crash happened because the plane was just too heavy because of all the drugs, like it was overloaded? Would that have changed things?
Now, that is a fantastic question, and it really turns the whole thing on its head. If the prosecution could have actually proven that the drugs were the direct cause of the crash, like maybe a mechanical failure caused by the extra weight, then yeah, they would have had a much stronger argument for felony murder.
It seems like the court was trying to find that tipping point, you know, the clear line where the felony itself goes from being just a coincidence to being the direct cause of the death.
Absolutely. It's all about striking that balance between making sure justice is done and also being certain that someone isn't being punished unfairly for something they didn't directly cause. The court even suggested that Bailey might have made those same mistakes, those same tragic mistakes, even if he was flying a plane full of, let's say, potatoes, something perfectly legal.
It's a good reminder that sometimes, well, accidents just happen. Life throws us curveballs, right? Even if someone is in the middle of committing a crime, that doesn't automatically make them guilty of murder.
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly why the court in this case placed so much emphasis on proving that direct causal link. They were very concerned with holding someone accountable for their actions, not for what they called misadventure.
This whole case got me thinking about the whole issue of intent. Does the defendant's state of mind even matter when we're talking about the felony murder rule? Does intent factor into it at all?
Oh, that's a question legal scholars have been debating for ages, really. Traditionally, intent hasn't always been a major factor in felony murder cases. The thinking is that if you're committing a felony, a dangerous one, you're already showing a reckless disregard for human life, right? So the thinking goes, you're held responsible for any deaths that result, even if you didn't specifically mean for someone to die. But this case...
Yeah, this case seems to be pushing back against that old way of thinking, doesn't it? It feels like the court was looking deeper, going beyond just intent, to try to get a fuller picture of exactly how the death happened.
You're spot on. I think that's exactly what the King Court was doing. They were shifting the focus. They were looking beyond that rigid interpretation of intent and moving towards a more comprehensive look at all the facts. They wanted to be absolutely certain that the felony itself was the actual cause of the death, not just a coincidence that happened to occur at the same time.
So it was about trying to find a more, I guess, nuanced and fairer way to apply the felony murder rule. Realizing that just because a death happens during a felony doesn't necessarily mean it was a direct result of the felony itself.
I think that's a great way to sum it up. It was about pushing for a more careful, more considered way of applying the rule instead of just using it as a blanket statement for any situation where a death happens during a crime. It's all about looking at the specific details of each case, not applying some rigid rule.
So it sounds like the King case might signal a shift in how Virginia courts are approaching felony murder cases. Maybe a move away from a more black and white interpretation and towards a more, I guess you could say, gray area, a deeper understanding of all the facts.
You're right on the money. It definitely shows that there's a growing awareness of the need to find a balance. It's about making sure justice is done and people are punished for their crimes, but also ensuring that it's fair and that people are held accountable for what they actually did. You can't just assume someone is guilty of murder because a death happened while they were committing a crime. You have to establish that clear causal link. King v. Commonwealth definitely set a high bar for prosecutors. They really have to prove that connection.
This deep dive has been really insightful. I feel like I have a much clearer grasp of the ins and outs of the felony murder rule and just how crucial that whole idea of causation really is. There's a lot to unpack here. This case really makes you think about the limits of criminal liability.
I agree, and it just shows how important it is to really take apart the specific facts of each case and not apply these broad legal principles like the felony murder rule in such a rigid, formulaic way. You have to look at the bigger picture.
This case really makes you think, doesn't it? It really does. But before we wrap up our deep dive into King v. Commonwealth, what are the biggest takeaways for our listeners? What should they be keeping in mind as they think about this case and what it means for, well, the future of the whole felony murder rule?
I think for me, one of the most important takeaways is just how crucial it is to prove direct causation. You absolutely have to have that in these felony murder cases. King v. Commonwealth just hammers that point home. Prosecutors can't just rely on the fact that, oh, someone died during a felony. That's not enough to get a conviction. They really have to draw that clear line connecting the felony itself to the death.
It can't just be guilt by association, right? Just because someone died when a crime was happening doesn't automatically make it murder. There has to be a much deeper level of analysis, you know, to really figure out if the crime actually caused the death.
You're exactly right. And I think this case really underscores how critical it is to carefully examine the unique circumstances of each case. The court in King didn't just apply the felony murder rule as this broad sweeping statement. They really dug into the evidence, looked at other factors, you know, like the weather, the pilot's experience, all of that. And they ultimately determined that the drug smuggling operation wasn't the direct cause of Bailey's death. It encourages us, really pushes us to look beyond the surface and really truly get into the nitty-gritty details.
Yeah, and it's a good reminder that even these long-standing legal principles, things like the felony murder rule, well, they're a lot more complicated to actually apply in real-world situations than you might think. They depend on a really nuanced understanding of the facts and, you know, looking at all the circumstances.
Absolutely. And I think this case also highlights just how important precedent is in our legal system. Remember, the King Court relied heavily on previous rulings, cases like Heacock and Redline, to help shape their analysis and make sure the law is being applied in a consistent way. Those precedents, they help us figure out the boundaries of these legal principles. They give us a framework for deciding future cases that deal with similar issues.
It's really amazing how these cases sort of build on one another. It's like they create this legal roadmap, you know, that guides how we interpret and apply the law. And each new case just adds a new layer of understanding, a fresh perspective to consider.
I love that analogy. It really captures that dynamic aspect of legal precedent. You know, it reminds us that the law isn't just this fixed, static thing. It's constantly evolving as new situations pop up, new challenges come our way. It's always changing.
So for our listeners out there, especially the lawyers and law students tuning in, what are some practical tips they can take away from all this? How can they apply the lessons from King v. Commonwealth to their own work, their own cases?
Well, the biggest thing is to always, always keep that idea of causation in mind. It's got to be front and center when you're working on any case that involves the felony murder rule or really any criminal charge for that matter. Make sure you really take the time to carefully analyze all those facts and make sure you can clearly show that causal connection. You've got to be able to link the defendant's actions to the harm that resulted. Don't just assume someone's guilty just because a death happened during a felony, okay? You have to really challenge those prosecution arguments. Look for other explanations, you know, different ways to interpret what happened. Be ready to poke holes in their whole theory of causation.
Right. It's about really being meticulous and not just looking at the surface level, you know, digging deeper, understanding all those subtle details, and not applying legal principles like felony murder in such a, like we were saying before, rigid or formulaic way.
Exactly. And it's also really, really crucial to be familiar with the relevant case law. King v. Commonwealth is a major precedent here in Virginia, and it's highly likely that it'll be cited in future cases that deal with similar questions. So if you're practicing law in Virginia or any jurisdiction that follows, you know, similar legal principles, make sure you're staying on top of the case law, particularly around the felony murder rule. You've got to stay sharp, stay informed. That's key.
This whole deep dive really highlights how crucial it is to stay up to date on how the law is changing. You know, it's constantly evolving. And if you're a legal professional, you really have to keep your finger on the pulse, you know, on those new cases, new precedents, and how the courts are interpreting the law. It's a lot to keep track of.
I couldn't agree more. Continuing education, keeping up with those changes, it's essential for any lawyer who wants to be effective and, well, stay at the top of their game, honestly. Cases like King v. Commonwealth, they're so valuable because they give us these great learning opportunities that can really shape how we practice law and help us better serve our clients. It's all about learning and growing.
This has been such a great deep dive. I really feel like we've unpacked all those complexities of King v. Commonwealth and explored the bigger picture, you know, what it means for not just the felon and murder rule, but how we approach criminal law in general. It's really thought-provoking.
It's been a real pleasure, as always, talking through this case with you. I always appreciate the opportunity to really dive into these fascinating legal questions and share what we find with everyone listening. It's rewarding.
And as always, we really encourage all our listeners to go check out the full case for themselves. You can find a link to it down in the show notes. It's a truly fascinating read, and it gives you a much deeper understanding of the court's reasoning and all the, you know, finer points of this really important case. It's a case that's sure to keep generating discussion and debate. I think it's a great example of how dynamic the law can be and how we're always searching for, you know, that true justice. It's a journey.
You said it. It really makes you think critically about, well, the limits of criminal liability and the whole role of causation when we're trying to determine guilt. You know, it's not always as straightforward as it might seem. It's complex.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks so much for joining us as we explored this world of causation, felony murder, and that constant balancing act between, you know, public safety and making sure we protect individual liberty. Until next time, everyone, keep those legal minds sharp.